Ambassador Noelle White, who is the permanent representative of Ireland to the UN in Geneva. Ambassador, thanks for joining me here today. My first question to you would be, why a political declaration? And maybe you can also tell us a little bit about Ireland's role in this process and why it was important for Ireland to take on a process that would address the humanitarian harm arising from the use of UEPA.
Thank you, Juliana, and thanks for asking me to be to take part in the podcast. It's very good to be here today. I suppose the simple, straight up answer to why a political declaration is because we were asked, and the Secretary General asked the international community, successive Secretary Generals, to bring forward a political declaration through multilateral negotiations. And we were responding, like others, were responding to that call. The international community needed a structure through which to address this this issue of great concern, which we can see is a problem. Is a problem all around us, and it's a current problem. And you need only look at Sudan. You need look at Kiev. These are very real issues. So a political declaration provided a structure through which the international community could address this issue. Secretary Generals successively had asked for it, and we were responding to that, as were others. To answer the other part of your question, this is something that appealed to us because also it fits very well with our overall policy posture in terms of support for disarmament in general. It has always been a part of our foreign policy since the founding of the state. It's something we've identified with and are identified by. Specifically, when we talk about the kind of difficulties or challenges that we're looking at now, we're looking at the increased urbanization of conflicts. And there is a need, and there's consensus around this, to address the humanitarian impact of UEPA. This is something that has emerged as a concern for quite a number of states and obviously across the United Nations. And we're hearing this, of course, from the International Committee of the Red Cross. So it was time to sit up, take notice, and address the issue. And we saw an opening to do that and to make a contribution towards that. Just to give a little bit more context in terms of our own approach overall on disarmament, we have been instrumental in the establishment of a number of key disarmament instruments, including the Anti-Personnel Landmine Convention and, of course, the Convention on Cluster Munitions. So whilst UEPA as such is distinct insofar as it's not a legally binding prohibition on any individual weapon type, it shares much of the core objective of reducing civilian suffering.
Absolutely. And in all of this, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how this process developed, kind of where did it start, where did it end, what happened along the way, and what was the actual agreement in the end?
No, I'm delighted you asked me that question because we're being asked and identified a lot around this because the declaration culminated in Dublin, and we're very pleased about that. We're very pleased to be able to deliver it, and we take certain pride in that, to be honest, and we wanted to see this continue to be a success. But like a lot of these things, these initiatives, there are many other people involved in it as well. We stand on the shoulders of giants, or as others have said, this was like a game of rugby, to put it in Irish context, if you will, and the ball was passed around and we took it over the line and managed to touch it down, to score the try. But that's a collective effort, and we situated ourselves at the end of that process, and we're happy to be able to do that. To go back a little bit to the start and to describe the process that you asked about, the roots of the political declaration are to be found in fact, in two UN General Assembly First Committee joint statements, 2018 and 2019, to be precise. Ireland led the negotiations on those texts to help raise awareness at the time of these, and as well also to gauge the level of support that there would be for a declaration. It's important to know that there's a market and then to try and harness that that sentiment. But without going blow by blow through who said what to whom over the years, just to give you the sort of broad highlights of this, back in 2019, the Secretary General and the President of the Red Cross issued a high-level joint appeal which called on all states and parties to arm conflict to, and I quote, avoid the use of explosive weapons in populated areas with wide area effects. And that was a catalyst for bringing quite an amount of support and political and public attention to the issue. I think it's important to recall in that respect as well that I mentioned this at the outset, the amount of work that went on before you get to the point of Dublin in November 2022. You have regional meetings in Maputo in 2017, Santiago in 2018, Germany as well led the so-called AWIPA talks, series of talks, and was following an international conference attended by 133 states in Vienna in September 2019. We stepped in at that point and we launched the negotiations in Geneva. What are we trying to do? Our objective was to initiate an inclusive and a transparent dialogue, of course, through which we could collectively find agreement around a political declaration on explosive weapons, in a nutshell. So all of that to say the text is the result, it's the outcome of a long process initiated over 3 years ago. The timelines, as we always say in conversations like this nowadays, the timelines are affected by COVID. And we had to work around that. But we were able, through our own efforts and through the efforts of our colleagues here in Geneva, our partners in Geneva, we were able to keep the momentum alive through a series of in-person, virtual, or a combination of in-person, virtual, and written consultations, as well as the inevitable online webinars and the ongoing bilateral meetings with which you'll be familiar. Final negotiations here in Geneva in June 2022, just to recall, and the text eventually adopted then in Dublin in November 2022 by 83 states. We're very pleased to see 83 states. If I suspect you'll ask me about this, we don't stop there. This is a process. So we are proud of the result, and we think that it is a framework which can ultimately have an important impact in terms of the protection of civilians and address the appalling situations that we're now witnessing around the world. And it is important to link them back and to link the declaration back to the realities of what's happening on the ground and the urbanization of conflicts and people who are being displaced, who are not combatants, who are simply suffering directly as a result of conflicts because urban areas are being targeted. It's not acceptable. It needs to be addressed. This is one element of that.
Absolutely. And I can just second what you said, that it is an achievement to be proud of. And I think this is what is transcending from everyone that I have spoken to for this podcast and outside of it. So, of course, this, as we know, is a political declaration. So I guess my question to you, Ambassador, would be, what would you reply to the cynics, the ones that say, well, it's a political declaration, it's not the same as a legally binding instrument. What's the worth of it?
It's very easy to be cynical about this. It's very easy to be cynical about political declarations, resolutions. I think there comes a certain point when we have to park our cynicism and look at what we're really addressing here. I happen to believe in the power of politics. I think politics brings us together, and even if we are disagreeing, it brings us together around our disagreements and allows us to move forward and progress. It's true that the text does not establish a legal prohibition on the use of any specific weapon. It is not a legal text. It's a political declaration. That's what it says on the tin. It's a political declaration. Prior to the political declaration, there wasn't one. And now there is. So now there is a structure through which we can address this issue. We can bring other countries on board, hopefully beyond the 83. And we can path or map out a way forward for addressing this very real issue. But there are, beyond the mere aspirational, there are concrete elements to this political declaration. First of all, the text, it recognizes the humanitarian issues that are associated with WEEP, and that's important. To set it down, you have 83 countries, you have the wrapped around with the UN and the ICRC, and all the international multilateral credibility that you could possibly hope for is there, stating clearly, yes, this is the humanitarian issue, this is what, so we are agreed on the problem, this is the issue that we need to address. We acknowledge that there is a problem to be addressed, and that's not to be minimized. It's important. And we set out within that a series of clear, forward-looking actions to address those issues. So now we're organized, we're together, we've identified the problem, and we have outlined, and it's not set down in hard, concrete terms, but outlined where we take this forward and how we take it forward. So you might ask, yeah, but it's all aspirational guff. And what are you going to do with this? And these are people in smoke-filled rooms and doesn't mean anything. But in fact, there are a series of practical measures within this for all parties to armed conflict to address. And these range from a commitment to strengthen international cooperation, assistance on identification, development, exchange of good practices, all around enhancing the protection of civilians, including, crucially, in the whole area of data collection, which allows us to identify more concretely where the problems are and how we go about addressing them. Crucially, I think it's important to recall that the text calls for the adoption and the implementation of a range of policies and practices to help avoid civilian harm, which is what we're about, including by restricting or refraining as much as appropriate, rather, from the use of explosive weapons when their use could be expected to cause harm to civilians or civilian objects. These are the pillars, the reference points around armed conflict, and those pillars and reference points exist, and it's important to remember that they exist, and they exist in the doctrines of warfare, essentially, and this is part of that overall body of work. Thank you.